I guess the irony is that this is a topic that we've done like several times anyway, but nonetheless, we will hopefully shed something new on it. So it's the Haftorah. I'm honestly not sure. It's the Haftorah of, I believe, Tazria. I'm not sure which one we read this week. It's been a long day. It's a great story, though. It's a story of Malachim Bet that we'll take a look at. So just a little bit of context. Aram was like for a while like the perpetual enemy of the Jewish people, and the Jews like usually thought they were about to be destroyed, and they somehow managed to push off Aram over and over and over again. And so what ends up happening is that's where our Haftorah comes in. Now, I don't know if anyone remembers this, but there was, we probably did this at one point or another. There is like a, in the war with, when Yoshiah was killed. So what happens, right? Yoshiah dies and there's like this guy that shoots an arrow up into the air and it hits like the chink in the armor or whatever. And, but like, it's almost like, it's like, wait, what if it was like... Yeah, it's like so crazy, and it like hits him, and like that's it. He's done. Heat-seeking missiles. That's like to be able to get it like that, because it's like not a straight shot. Like the Medrash goes like it's like that and like that and like that until it gets in or whatever. And so fine. So who? So the question is like, who is that guy? So the Medrash tells us that's Naaman. So that's where we pick up. So all of a sudden, Perek Bet Pasuk Hey, it's not the beginning. I'm sorry, Perek Hey, Pasuk Aleph and Malachim Bet. It's not the beginning of the Haftorah, because the Haftorah is actually the continuation of the story of the week before, right? There is two Haftorahs back to back. It's the Arba Mitzorayim, and then it's Naaman. And yet the Haftorahs like kind of bleed into each other. Rabbi Riskin, we did a few years ago, explains what the connection is. So what happens? We're told, V'naman tzar tzvar melech Aram haya ish gadol lefnei Adonav. So Naaman, the great general of Aram, is a great man in front of his masters, I assume the king, unesu panim, and he is, you know, very honored, kivo natan Hashem tshuva l'Aram, because he saved Aram. Vaishaya Gibor Chayil. And the man is a Gibor Chayil. He's strong. Mitzora. So I never realized that, but Rabbi Sachs points out that it's like there's like a little bit of like a letdown there. We're like, he's Naaman. He's amazing. He's awesome. And then he's a Mitzora. And it just takes him down. No, because the story is going to make it very clear that he has tzaras. So Varam yatzu gidudim, and Aram at the time was engaging in guerrilla warfare with the Jews. Vayishp me'aretz Yisrael narak tana, and they take a captive, a narak tana, young girl. Vatihi lifnei eshet Naaman, and as it would be, she becomes the maidservant of the wife of Naaman, who's a Mitzora. But Tomer el Gevirta, so she says to her boss, Achalei Adoni lefnei Anavi asher b'Shomron, az yasofu to mitzarato. If you go to the Navi in Shomron, all your problems will be solved. Now this Navi is Elisha. Elisha is like pretty famous at this point in time. And yet, he's just a Navi in Shomron. Right. So that's what she's told. So the wife, that's interesting. I don't know what that is. And he went and he told. It must be. Yeah, that's what it is. He, Naaman, goes and tells the king of Aram what he heard from this girl from Eretz Yisrael. Vayomer
Melech Aram. That's not a normal way to describe the story. Kazot. It's almost like, yada, yada, yada. This is what she said. Don't they usually repeat, like...
Yeah, I mean, the Torah does repeat a lot of things like that. So that is, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure.
They kind of glossed over. I mean, they all know he's like, I got this from Seinfeld. Yes. I guess they know he's in Mitzvah, but like, there's no reason to, like, you know, belabor the point.
Right. So, yeah, I hear... It's interesting, Rabbi Sachs says that, like, maybe here, like, tzaras was, like, I mean, it could be, like, real tzaras also, but it's just, like, the picture-perfect general is not necessarily, like, this misfigured, like, person, and that's what he turns out to be, although the, you know, like, Moshe Dayan in his patch, like, could be the exact opposite, but... That's sort of what, you know, could be the Kazova Kazot. Like, this was like the running conversation. Like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, wait, I got a solution. This girl, right, this little kid who's in my house said I should go to, like, the Navi in Shomron and he'll make all my problems go away. Okay. So, Vayomer Melech Aram, Lech Bo Veshlecha Sefer El Melech Yisrael. So the king of Aram says, come, and I will send... a sefer, right? I'll send a letter to the king of Israel. Vayelech leikach biyado eser kikrei kesef. He takes with him 10,000 talents of silver, the sheshet alafim zahav, and 6,000 golden coins, the eser chalifot begadim, and 10 changes of clothing. This guy Naaman must have like major clout, right? Like nobody, no king writes a check like that. But he was like the national war hero that like beat the Jews. So he says then the message to the king is that when Naaman shows up, so you should just know that he's my guy, and you should take care of him from his sarat. Now, interestingly, I guess. I'm not sure if this is 100% factually correct, but it would make sense, right? Like, wouldn't they know who Naaman is if he's like this war hero? But it's possible, right? Yoshiyahu was the king from the southern kingdom. And they're going to the Melech in Shomron, the northern kingdom. So it's possible that like, you know, it's...
To see a Navi, they don't know his name.
To a Navi that they don't know his name. That's like very humbling if you're like Elisha. Like you're the great Elisha, you've done some pretty cool things. It's already Parak Hey. And they're like, yeah, there's this guy.
What is the dynamic right now between Aram and Israel? Are they was one subservient to the other? Or are they?
It's a good question. I mean, Aram, it's been a couple of years since we were there, but I think they're never like, I mean, it's never good with Aram, right? Like, they were never at peace with Aram. They're somehow, like, they miraculously, like, get rid of Aram a bunch of times.
They said they didn't want to beat them. What did that result?
Right, but it's like in waves. Like, they beat them, but yet, like, if they're guerrilla warfare, it means that they're, like, not, like, you don't have guerrilla warfare against, like, a vassal state. So, but right, but I'm not sure. There's like a weird dynamic there. Like Aram is ever present, but like at least for the southern kingdom, actually the northern kingdom also, right? Because Assyria is the one that exiles the northern kingdom. They're always just bad enough that it's like, oh God, Aram is coming, but it just seems like they never get over the hump. It's like the Knicks of the 90s, you know what I'm saying? Like they just never got there. okay, so that's what we're up to. So what I think is important is just going forward, there's a lot of like smaller bit characters in here. And I think it's interesting, and some of them not so small, but it's interesting to note their reaction to things. So the king of Aram was like, all right, we got to do this. Right.
Are we applying the Haggadah,
the Megillah?
Of minor characters here?
Which one? That minor characters aren't really minor characters?
Yeah, somebody else and somebody
else. Oh, I don't know, honestly, of any like Midrashim on this that would lead us to any other characters, but I think minor characters, it's always fascinating to look at them because A, you know, right? Is there really such a thing as a minor character, right? Like there is, you know, like the famous line, there's no such thing as small roles, just small people. If you're what?
If you're named in Tanakh.
Yeah, they, right. You got into the record books. Like they're right. So, but no, I think here, like, there's clearly like the major players in this story are obviously Naaman, and you know, like, not to like ruin the story, but Elisha, right? Like we can guess that they're going to be the two major characters. You have the king of Aram. He doesn't have a major role other than like a major pocketbook, right? He writes like a really big check. But like, okay, therefore what? And now we're about to be introduced to like another minor character. It'll be interesting to see, right? What's his reaction, and does his reaction make any sense? And is there a mistake that some of these characters make? So Vayikra Kro Melech Yisrael to Sefer. So when the king of Israel reads the book, Vayikra Begadav. He tears Kriya. Vayomer Elokim ani lamit ulachayot. He said, "Oh my God, I can't make people better. I can't. I can't. You know, kill and bring back to life." Kizesho leach elai lesof ish mitzarato. You want me to get rid of his tzarat? Ki achdu nauru ki mitanehu li. He's looking for a taina on me, right, to attack. The king of the Jewish people, the right Melech Yisrael, the northern king, he says, "Say again."
Who was it at the time? It sounds like a pretty
thin. So, for whatever reason, I actually think it might be Achav, but I'm not positive. But for whatever reason, and I remember when we learned it together way back in Melachim Bet, that I thought it was, first of all, it was hard because you have like the Elisha Eliyahu like saga. They go like, you know, they part ways, and then all of a sudden you reintroduce the king. And Melachim in general is hard to keep track of who all the kings are. And for whatever reason, it's like purposely, like the king doesn't have a name, and then you're like, I don't know. So I think it's Achav, but this would anyway. Like I mean. You know that I have like this soft spot in my heart for Achav, which is like, I know it's like very bizarre, but there is, right? Like this sounds from, although the other apostles, firstly, he says Elokim, not Hashem, but he's saying, this is a pretense to attack me, right? You sent Naaman with a check saying, fix me. And you're like, what do you want? I can't do this. And then when I...
The girl tells him that there's this Navi in trouble.
Right.
He tells the king, Kazos to Kazos, whatever.
Right.
And then next thing you know, the king says, letter, you please fix Naaman.
To the king of Israel.
Right, which I guess is like, I guess the answer is like they have diplomatic, I don't know how diplomatic there are, but there's relationship between the kings.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone was talking about the Navi anymore.
No, but I don't think they have diplomatic relationships. The opposite.
Okay.
They're now sending a delegate with payment saying, I'm coming in peace because I need my general to be repaired.
No, but he's telling the king, you please fix my... He probably told the king, he didn't want to say some random prophet can heal me. He said, the king of the Jews can heal me.
Maybe he's not so from, right? Maybe that's the thing. The king assumes, the king of Aram was saying, listen, you're like the person I know, so go like make the shidduch with Aram, with the Navi. Well, and the king is like, I don't know. I don't hold by the Navi.
I'm saying nobody's even talking about the Navi anymore.
I hear.
I think though that that you know, if you were the enemy, and you send your top general walking in, you know that's just, you know, like, oh my gosh, he's attacking. Why is he attacking? It's like setting off nuclear warheads without pretense. Yeah. So he's doing the diplomatic thing. The king is saying, I'm coming
in peace.
Not coming in war. Right. Please take care of this. But whoever the king is in Israel, he probably has no idea what's flying. He has no idea. Obviously, what the little girls, the girl said to his Naaman's wife.
Right. So I'm not sure if you guys are on the same page or not. Shmuel, I think very clearly feel. I know. Shmuel feels the Navi's out of the picture. Like somehow in the process, the Navi has been removed. And it's like straight up to the king and then whatever. But Steve, I'm not sure, like, if you and Greg are like, well, Greg, I think, was like, use the king to get to the Navi, right?
Right, you don't, because a general's not going to walk in by himself.
Okay.
He's going to come in with his whole entourage.
Right.
What's the king going to think unless a letter comes first with payment saying, my general's coming in peace. This is not an attack.
That's fine.
The only thing that's missing from the letter is the fact that he's...
Is that the king thinks that he's supposed to fix him and not that he has a Navi living in his northern kingdom.
Right, which... I think begs the question whether Achav like was like, I don't hold by the Navi anyway, right? Like, he doesn't believe in the Navi, and he doesn't believe in, and he knows his own Nevi'im are false also.
But Achav,
so he's like,
Achav knew Eliyahu, and he knew that Eliyahu was able to
do stuff.
He knew the power of the Nevi'im.
I hear he didn't know about the Arab either, so.
So then what? So why would he then ignore Elisha altogether?
Right, that's the question.
I mean, Elisha wasn't maybe he felt Elisha wasn't Eliyahu, right? Like,
maybe he didn't have any kind of relationship with Elisha.
Elisha hadn't, I think it's, at this point, there's a good chance that Elisha hadn't bothered him yet. I don't know, is there a Navi in here anywhere?
He gets this thing from the king. The king around says, can you heal him, please? It's like, I can't. But what kind of bushes that if I can't? You know, and then I have to call some Navi to do it. And they, I'm going to take it the wrong way. That some guy from that has not even named living in the hills can, you know, that's have to call in to fix him. I can't do it.
Right. Yeah.
That one?
He's quaking his pants.
Yeah, no, he is. He's very nervous because he's like, shoot, we're going to get like hammered, right? So what happens? So Vahikishmo Elisha Isha Lokim Ki Karam Melech Yisrael. And this is the best part, right? Elisha, it's not that the king is like, oh God, now what? Vahikishmo Elisha Isha Lokim Ki Karam Melech Yisrael Begadav. When Elisha hears that the king of Israel has torn his clothing, Vahishlach El Melech Lemor, Lama Karata Begadecha. He sends a message to him saying, why did you tear your clothing?
Is this Elisha hearing it through Nevuah?
I would doubt it.
He just happened to hear that the king...
I would imagine that this...
How many days or weeks is this going over? Because they didn't have Twitter.
I think it's highly confidential.
When the king tears Priya, it's big news.
Right, but hold on. Let's just... Before... Right, I mean, I understand that nowadays, like, obviously, if something like that happens... It would be like, you know, it would be on social media and like very quickly be out there. But let's just assume like the king did this in front of who?
His court.
His court and his cabinet, right? You don't think there was one guy in the cabinet that was like, this is weird. Like, we have Elisha here. Like, maybe he could help. And like then, like, he either went to Elisha because he was like a smart guy or... like word trickled down to Elisha. Like, I think that's like fair and possible. So Elisha comes. But I guess it's possible. I mean, I think it's wild that we're in a base medrash with a lot of bookshelves and there's not a Tanakh or a Navi. But it would be way too much to thumb through. Okay. So fine. So where are we up to? We are up to Elisha, right? So we're in the middle of Pasuk Chet. Now he doesn't even go to the king. He sends a message to the king saying, "Lama karata begadecha? Why did you tear your clothing? Yavo na elai v'yeda ki yesh navi b'Yisrael. He should come to me, and he'll know that there's a navi in Yisrael. What? Oh, so that's a good question, because there's discussion at the end of the Haftorah where they say, like, let's...
here you go.
Oh, thank you. Where they say, okay, let's pay the... I want to pay you. And Elisha says, I'm taking money from you. And he begs him, and he refuses to take the money. And then afterwards... So Gehazi goes running and says, oh, actually... my master changed his mind. He wants the money, blah, blah, blah. And he takes the money. And that's when Elisha says to him, Okay, so you're gonna have tzaras forever, and you know, in your entire family. Okay, so
he
becomes
one of the.
He is the right. He's one of the Arba Mitzorayim.
He's rich.
Okay, so Pasachet, that was a good question, right? Henry wanted to know, how did he hear?
Right, how long did this go on? Because then he sent word back to the king.
Nobody seems to be bothered by that question. but it is interesting.
It's fake news.
Right, Elisha does not go himself. Elisha sends like a messenger. Right, so I think Elisha, we have to kind of watch Elisha's character, you know, like his whole storyline here. He hears that that the king has torn Kriya, and he sends a message saying, like, what's your problem? Like, hello, I'm here. So pasuk tet vayavo Naaman v'susav v'rechbo v'yamod petach abayit l'Elisha. So clearly the message was delivered from the king, and he's like, whew, like hopefully that will take a little bit of the heat off my back. So he sends a message. He sends Naaman with his chariots and horses and his whole entourage to the house of Elisha's door, to the door of Elisha's house. Vayishlach elav Elisha malach lemor. So listen to what Elisha does again. Elisha sends an angel, a messenger to him, and says, Haloch v'rachatzta sheva pamim b'yardein. Go and dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan. V'yashob b'sarcha l'cha utahar. And then when you do that, your flesh will go back to normal. So again, what is
the word tahar?
Tahar as opposed to
healed. Tahar. Well, we think of it as
a spiritual.
Yeah, spirit, like a purified, but it means you'll be healed. Your physical malady will be taken care of.
Okay.
Does tahar mean that?
So tahar is that's a good question. Is tzaras?
Yeah.
Right.
So when Moshe gets it at the step,
what does it say there? I actually this room has many chumashim, so it's a lot easier. What does it say there? So he's. Well, actually, the most famous one would be by when Miriam has tzaras. What does it say there? Kelna refana la. So I guess we don't have to look up what happens there. Because, right,
That would seem like a better use for tahara there by Miriam.
Right.
Here, it would seem
right. Like, yeah. Yeah, so that's a good question. That is a good question. So what that was pasuk yod.
If he was converted here, then okay, then he was spiritually clean too, and I'd buy that one. Okay, it's a mistake.
What did Naaman do to get the tzaras in the first place?
And so the Mitzvah, David says, later on, Vitaher Naset Tahor min Hatzarat. That he'll become Tahor from his Tzaras. What the question, Steve, your question was, what did he do to get Tzaras?
Yeah, so we know what Miriam did, we know what Moshe did to get Tzaras. So what did Naaman do? He's not why is a non-Jew getting a Jewish
affliction?
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Maybe because he took the girl.
No, it actually says
he was a Mitzorah first.
Yeah. Right, so Chazal tell us, here, this is the Malbim, Chazal tell us that he was blamed because Aram went to attack the Jewish people and took this girl as a slave. So that would be, that's one. That's actually the only answer that I found here. The Metzudas David says that the reason, not he doesn't say why he got tzaras, but he says the reason why tzaras bothered him so much. It bothered him because as a gibor chayil, he wanted to go out to war, and because he had tzaras, nobody wanted him to be part of the war. So it bothered him. But yeah, I mean, it's a good question what he got for that, or why he got tzaras. Doesn't seem like, other than that one possibility of the Chazal, that it's a punishment,
we're assuming that this is a uniquely Jewish thing, then it makes sense reason that if a non-Jewish guy is big, so it's something to the Jewish people.
Right, I hear it. Before he was Jewish. I think there is actually a thought that he might have, like, he might have converted after, but not.
Sir Asa Rush, like, I gotta get more than that.
Closer in proximity.
All right. Anyway, David, I guess my point, I guess what my answer would be is your question is better than any answers we have, which is like a running theme. Pasuk Aleph. Vayiktzov Naaman vayelach. Naaman gets angry and goes. Vayomer. I mean, like, he gets so angry, he leaves. Vayomer, hinei amarti elai yetzei atzov, ve'amad ve'kara b'shem Hashem Eloka, ve'inif yado l'makom v'asaf ha'mitzora. So he says to him, it's like, great. Right? Like, this is a great pasuk. He says, this is what I thought was going to happen. I thought you were going to come out. Remember, Elisha didn't even leave the house. He sends a message down. And
the prescription now.
Yeah, he goes, I thought you'd come out, and you would call out to God, and you would heinif yadol makom, right? You would like go like that to the place,
like in the movie.
And the tzaras would like disappear. It's like the like a witch doctor, yeah. Right? Like that's what I expected to happen. And then he says, right, which is I think it's an important one to note, right? We call it the mighty Jordan. It ain't too mighty, right? In many places, the Jordan River makes the Delaware look like the mighty Mississippi. Right, where it's like, you know, just like this little lazy river and whatever. He says, "Hello, Tov, Amanau, Parpar, Narota Mesek, Mikol Meme Yisrael." He says, "We have better rivers in Damascus. I've got Amanan Parpar. So Mikol, right, Halo Rachatz Behemet Aharti. I could have like gone and washed in there just as much and it would have become Tahor. Vayifen Vayelech Bechemon. He leaves and goes in anger. So this is where, like, his servants step in as, I guess, another set of minor characters.
I find this whole thing, like, religiously puzzling. They go to war with the Southern Kingdom. So they're warring on a nation that they believe that their God is the God of the almighty, all-powerful God. Or just, they have one of the gods. Because now I'm going to come to your sister, the Northern Kingdom, and say, I need your God to heal me because I have this disease. So is God powerful? Is he only powerful in Israel? Is he a real powerful God? And he even describes, like, I thought you'd come here, pray to your God, do something, hand motions, and I'd be cured. So they believe in our Hashem as the God, or just
as a God. And right, God. No, I think that's a really important point, is that they believed back then, like, the problem that they had with Judaism was not the fact that Judaism had a different God. The problem they had with Judaism was that Judaism negated, not that the Northern Kingdom was really holding much by that. Honestly, I don't think the Southern Kingdom was doing too hot either, honestly. But, like, the Northern Kingdom, like, even there, they probably were like hook, line, and sinker on like the whole like culture around them. Like, it's not that God can't exist, but it's like, why do you need to be exclusive? Like, I mean, whatever. Like, they would say, they probably felt like Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem. They didn't think, like, if you just didn't have that last word in there, I think they would have been at peace with it. But for sure, from Aram, they were like, It's really cool because at the end, Naaman says to him, listen, I gotta, like, after he gets cured, so another, like, spoiler, he says, listen, I gotta be honest with you. I'm gonna take some dirt, like, a lot of it back from Israel with me, and I'm gonna pray in private to God. Just don't hold it against me that when the king is with me, I'm gonna worship his God.
Right, so the girl, so then it makes it more important with the girls, whatever. Name, title, whatever, a role, she probably says, like you're describing, the God in Israel, he can clear out Saras. That's what he's good for. It's like, oh, I want to go there.
No one says anything about God. She said nothing.
Okay, but right. We have a shaman who can, through one of his potions and stuff, can heal that. There's no indication that she tries to say, like, right? The god of the world, if you go there, because that's more of a, like a...
Yeah, but Naaman must feel that there is a god component in it, because because he says, right, Vamavika Rabbi Shem Hashem Lakav, you're going to daven to God. So, right, I guess what she was saying was, you go to the Navi, right? I mean, this is like probably what it would be most similar to, like the whole notion of going to like Mekubalim. More so than like going to Rebbe's, because like, I don't know, some, it's like you go to the Mekubal, he does some weird stuff, and I apologize if anybody here is like, you know, right, well, either that or goes to them, but like, you know, you have your whole thing, and you go, and the Mekubal does like all these weird things, and then all of a sudden, like, you're cured. Like, that's really what he was looking for. So what, but they, even there, like, you recognize that God has a part of it. It's just like, you know, if you go to Rav Schechter will tell you, like, what are you wasting your time with me? Like, I don't know, go grab a Tehillim, like, daven, and like, you know, yeah, beseder, God willing. You go to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe says, all right, let me talk to you, I'll daven for you. Then you go to the Mekubal, and it's like a whole different world. But yeah, but I think everybody would hopefully, in all three of those possibilities, believe that God is a part of it. But he's really angry, right? He's really, really angry. And then what happens? What did the Navi ask you to do? Like, this was not a big ask. All he asked you to do was go in the water. That's all he told you to do. And remember, you were prepared to write a check for like thousands and thousands and thousands of whatever, pieces of silver and gold, and all he's saying is go into the water. His servants. So his servants are basically saying, like, why wouldn't you hedge your bet? Like, let's just, the worst thing that happens, you go in the water, it doesn't work, you go home a little wet. But if you go into the water and you're saved, amazing, right? So that's what they say. So Vayered Vayitbol Vayarden Sheva Pamim, he goes and he does it, Kidvar Isha Lukim, Vayashab Besarok Basar Nar Katom Aitar. His flesh returns to normal and he's pure. Vayashav El Ish Halokim Hu V'chol Machaneyu. He comes back to the Ish Halokim and to his entire like camp. Now that's an interesting line, right? How are you going to read it? Ki ein Elokim b'chol ha'aretz kim b'Yisrael. There's no God in the land, or is that no God on the planet?
He probably wasn't referring to Israel as Haaretz.
So you're saying that he's talking about on the world.
Impressed.
Right.
Or unless he goes on the thing, like, literally, like, in the ground, the earth, the water, the healing properties of the...
Yeah, no, so that's... you're saying, like, in the earth. Right, okay. So, I mean, I guess I was, like, questioning whether it's, like, B'chol Ha'aretz is the land of Israel. Like, you are... Like, your God is supreme here. Or it's like...
Yarding isn't in Israel.
Why not?
Well, I guess it depends what Israel was then. Was it the border or was it...
I mean, the biblical border of Israel would for sure include the Jordan River.
Right. I don't know what the...
I'm saying, like, I don't know nowadays, like, where... First of all, we had both sides of the Jordan. Right. So, like, that would mean that that was part of Eretz Yisrael. There's actually, it's interesting... it's completely off topic, but the even in the Mediterranean, like there's a question, like what part of the Mediterranean, like when do you come into the waters of the land of Israel from a halachic standpoint, not like from a geopolitical standpoint, but you go from the top of wherever the land of Israel is to the bottom, right? So the land kind of like pans out like that. So you draw a line from the top down, and then everything that, you know, like just a straight line, and everything that fits in on that side is the land of Israel. So, but I would assume, like with the Jordan, it doesn't matter because they had both sides of it. So he either way, he's impressed, right? Like he has like a lot of buy-in here, and then he says, so what happens? I want to give you a present. He says, I swear by God, I won't take anything. And he pushes him, right? Usually by Tsarbo, when people push you in Tanakh, what ends up happening? Fine. But he refused. By Yimain, he refused. Okay. So it is interesting, just to go back to the characters, right? What are the mistakes made by the characters in our story? So let's see. Who do we have? Did the king of Aram do anything wrong that we could think of?
Yeah. I mean, in his letter to Melch Yisrael, he didn't identify whom Naaman should be going to.
Okay, so the king could have died. The king could have been clearer. Okay. Anything else? All right. So I guess we would say that the king is pretty okay. We don't even know the full contents of the letter. Maybe there was some sort of like in there, and maybe the king of the Jewish people was just panicky because he's like, oh, shoot. Like, what if Elisha decides to be stubborn? Wouldn't be shocking. I'm going to get like my head on a plate. Okay, so who else do we have? We have the king of the Jewish people, right? We have Melch Yisrael. What about him? What mistakes did he make?
Well, thinking that he's the one who's going to, they thought he was going to be the one who could fix him.
Okay, thinking that it was in his, that he was the one required to. Okay, anything else?
He doesn't send for Elisha. Elisha hears and comes.
Yeah, that's a pretty big mistake, right? Meaning like, whether he thought that it was on him or not, okay, fine. Like, maybe give him a pass. Like, sometimes, like, leadership is tough. And sometimes, like, you don't, like, you think you need to have all the answers. But, like, okay, he could have reached out to Elisha. He knows that that's Elisha's, like, forte. Okay, who else made, what about Naaman? What are his mistakes?
He doesn't go into a lot of detail when he's talking to his king. Just
kind of
glosses over.
Just the kazo. Okay.
He doesn't seem to be particularly specific when he comes to the king of Israel.
Okay.
He gets angry at the device.
He gets angry, okay, yeah.
He took an Argatana as an Atheist, whatever, that's really the times.
Right, okay, good. So those are...
his own conclusion about what he thinks should happen.
Right.
As opposed to being open to...
Right, so his perspective on religion for sure is, like, skewed, and he has, like, a stubborn streak to him. Right, like, he's ready to walk away. The Navi has, like, a cure, and he's like, forget it, I'm not interested.
No, what did you say? Did Elisha not treat him correctly?
So that's a good question. I actually, not on purpose. I left Elisha out of the question of whether Elisha made any mistakes, because... I didn't even like, it was not even on my radar to suggest that Elisha did make any mistakes. But David says, it sounds like, right? David's questioning, like, did Elisha make any mistakes? So what would your mistake be that you'd credit Elisha for?
Well, if this guy is like the general of a possible enemy, you'd want to treat him well, and you'd want to go and talk to him yourself and tell him, give him some... counseling,
right.
This is why.
I guess it depends on
what did you think was going to, let me explain why that's not, I know, as opposed to literally, like, you sent the prescription, you, like, faxed it over to him. Like,
right, bad bedside manner for a Navi.
Well, it depends if Naaman realized that it was an angel.
I don't think it was an angel, it means messenger.
Okay.
But, you know, it wasn't, I can't imagine he didn't know it wasn't the Navi. I can't imagine, I would be shocked if he didn't know. And then he came back to his house. He might have seen him the next time. It doesn't really say. He came to his machna. I don't know. But
So I guess that with all those pieces on the table, we can return to a question that we probably should have asked at the beginning, and that is, why is this the Haftorah of Parshios Tazuya Mitzora? So the obvious answer is... because he was a Mitzora, right? But the question is there something more to it than just that? And how do we look at Naaman? I think that's also a question to, like, you know, to think about. Like, is he just stubborn? Is he, like, just, like, his perspective on religion is off? So perhaps the message of the Haftorah is really what Elisha does. Elisha mistreats... who? Or mistreat might be a strong word. But Elisha twice is not so respectful. So who are the two times?
The king.
Right. So he's not good to his own king. He's not good to Naaman. So why is he doing that? So perhaps the message is that, like, you know, we look at tzaras as like in terms of, like, if you ask anybody, why does a person get tzaras? What's the answer? It's lashon hara, right? But first of all, there's many more reasons that Chazal give us for why you can get tzaras. But also, I think that when we think about lashon hara, we have to think, like, take a step back and ask ourselves, like, what gives a person, like, the right? Or why does a person feel that they should speak lashon hara? So often, at the heart of lashon hara is arrogance, right? Meaning, like, I think I'm better than them, so therefore, I can say what I want. Which makes sense, right? And I will certainly say that I've done it, and I'm sure many of us have been in that place where, like, it's not like gossiping, like, you know, like the village yenta who, like, she speaks lashon hara just because, like, it's just like that's what she does. But often when we say, like, harsh words about a person, it's because I don't really respect them or I feel that I'm better than them. So what Rabbi Sacks says is that perhaps, actually this might not be Rabbi Sacks, I think what the message of the Haftorah is that Elisha is putting them in their place. Elisha is saying that Naaman, who were you? Like, you have to remember your beginnings. You were a sharpshooter in the army. That because of the way your arrow miraculously or even skillfully, depending on whether you want to accept the Medrash or not, killed the king of Israel, you became the general. And like that went to your head, and therefore you became like this big guy. I'm not going to treat you the right way with respect on what you believe, but I'm going to treat you in the respect that you really deserve. And it could be that what actually cures Naaman?
It's the humility.
Right, the humility. It's not that he goes to the Jordan River and dips 7 times, because that sounds a lot like what? Right? Like, I dive and I do some hand motions and it's all good. But perhaps, right, the reason why he is cured is because he's humbled. And Elisha is sending, I believe, the very same message to the king. He's like, you know, you're so arrogant. You really think you're the one that's going to be able to do it? Come on. That's what the Navi is there for. So that's, I think, one possible connection between the Haftorah and our parsha. But I'll end with a beautiful idea by Rabbi Sacks. Rabbi Sacks says that part of Naaman's problem is this misconception of religion. He believes in Hashem by the time the story is over, but he believes in, like, a different kind of God, you know, our God, than really is. Elisha teaches him that religion is less about the bells and whistles and less about the smoke and all the other thing, and it's more about the heart and feeling. It's kind of what Elisha is trying to tell him, is that, like, I'm not going to do any of that, but it's the feelings you have in there. And when your feelings in there are proper, right, that's when God accepts your tshuva. And perhaps that's also, you know, part of the message of tzaras. The tzaras, a piece of it, is that we change our perspective on, like, on God. Like, we think that, sorry, lost my train of thought on that one. It's not coming back. All right, anyway, to put that aside, Rabbi Sacks leaves it that Elisha teaches that religion is a much more complicated thing than they used to think back in those days. And because of that, and that's, I think, why Naaman gets so angry, right? Because he's like, but that's not really where religion is. And that's what Elisha tries to teach him. What's amazing is that later on in the story, that's what Naaman says, I'm going to be religious, but I'm going to do it in the closet because I can't afford to live that way publicly, lest I fall out of favor with the king of Aram. But yeah, so that's two possible ways to view Naaman and two possible ways to view the Haftorah.